All right, well, I want to thank Guillermo Sapiro for coming. He's our last speaker for today. Guillermo is a professor of electrical and computer engineering at the University of Minnesota. He's been a good friend for many years. We've worked together on diffusion tensor imaging for some time now. And just a very, very brilliant engineer and mathematician, has won countless awards. And actually only comparatively recently has come into the field of brain mapping and brain imaging with lots of very innovative approaches. And today's talk is going to be a little bit about structural imaging and a little bit about diffusion tensor imaging, detecting mixed density and dimensionality with applications to brain imaging. So thanks to Guillermo for coming.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, everybody, for being here. So this is my N going to infinity talk at IPAM. And but always I get surprised again. The previous speaker asked to talk a bit more, and he was allowed. I asked to talk a bit less, and I wasn't allowed. So I have to talk with him to see how he managed to convince the organizers to do that. I never managed that. So thank you very much. I actually decided to talk about only the second part and not the first part, in part because there's going to be a lot of structural work, and I want to kind of talk about something slightly different. And although I might be misrepresenting Professor Cao, that is also in the audience, that was the main force behind the first part, which was about finding sulci curves in an automatic fashion, I might just briefly talk at the end about that if you are still away by 7 when I finish my talk. But if not, I'm going to just talk about this, which is slightly different. And it's about studying, and it's going to be clear in the next couple of slides, it's about studying the complexity of data sets, and the application will be for the complexity of the brain, and from a certain perspective, which I'm going to define in a second. And it's this started with computational theoretical work that we did with Gloria Haro. She's currently in Barcelona, Gregor Randall and myself, and there is a couple of papers on that. And more recently, Gloria, with Christoph Lenglet and Paul, we started to apply this to diffusion imaging. And actually, Christoph is going to actually continue in part this talk during his talk. So I'm going to present more of the mathematical and computational background and a few results, but he's going to talk about more results, especially results that we have been getting more recently with Daniel Frank and Kelvin Lim on multi-resolution and things related to that. So it's going to be kind of different than I think most of what you're going to be listening to, certainly this week, but most probably next week as well. And all these references are available. If you want them, just send me an email and I will provide them to you. So what's the goal? The goal is that we are giving point cloud data and think about diffusion imaging. And maybe I'm early because most diffusion imaging is going to come later, but I assume that most of you know. I'm going to give my 5 seconds of explaining diffusion imaging and just at a high level. Think that at every voxel we have a 30-dimensional vector or 105-dimensional vector that each component measures how much diffusion there is in that direction. Okay? So we end up with very high-dimensional data, a point cloud of high-dimensional data, and the goal of this work is to identify that the point cloud is a mixture of different dimensions, which means different complexities. So in this case, there's actually a curve, which is a one-dimensional object. All is embedded in this R3 for this example. Again, for diffusion imaging, we are in R30, R105, or depending on your representation, if you use spherical harmonics, I will mention that later. But this is a very simple structure, one-dimensional. Then there is a plane here, which is a two-dimensional plane. And then there is a point cloud here, which is actually 3 dimensions. And I have to try to infer this from just the data. And from the language of the physics, it's just data that has different complexity. But I'm giving all the data at once. So you give me the whole brain, and I have to understand that there are regions that have different complexity than others. So this is called a strata. It's a union of manifolds. And basically, each manifold has different dimension, different complexity, and also maybe different density as well. So Many of you know that it has been a lot of work in the community in what's called manifold learning, which is how to learn one manifold. And one of the interesting things, from my point of view, is that although the work in manifold learning has been great, interesting data does not live on a manifold. Okay? It's very hard to find real interesting data that is on a manifold. Really hard. Okay? Most data this is much more complex and lives in union of manifolds. Okay, even if you take an image patch that has just an edge, okay, the very simplest model, an edge, doesn't live in a manifold, live actually on a claim button, which is not even a manifold. Okay? So it's really hard to find manifolds in real science. So we had to try to analyze more complex data. Once I separate, then locally each one of these is a manifold, but not as a data set. So here is my goal, to go from here to here. And this is basically what I'm going to talk. The motivation I just gave, I'm going to talk about. All this is mostly math, but it's going to be very intuitive. So it's just a bit of drawings. And then some experiments for diffusion imaging. I mean, first some artificial ones so you get an idea, then diffusion imaging. And as I say, during the talk of Christoph Lengle, there's going to be more of the neuroscience part. And then I'm going to just conclude. So here is how we start. Once again, we're given a point cloud of data. And I'm going to describe work done by Levina and Bickel at the statistics group at Berkeley, and that's kind of a starting point of the model. So here is what we have. We have points, and I'm going to try to estimate the dimension or the complexity at this point. Okay, so this is one point. So maybe I'm here, maybe I'm here. And I'm trying to do a local estimation of the complexity in that area. It turns out you can very easily show this formula, which is actually very simple. It's as follows. Okay, so I'm on the pond, and I'm in, maybe my data is dimension 3, but I'm embedding in 100 dimensions, okay? So I draw a 100-dimensional ball around the point. And I count the number of points that fall inside that ball. That's going to be actually my measurement all the time. Okay? And this is going to, the radius of the ball is kind of a scale. It will be clear later. It turns out that the number of points that fall in the ball divided by the total number of points is proportional to the following. The density, so, you know, how you sample points. The volume of the m-dimensional sphere, that has a closed formula, okay? And the distance from the point to the kth point. So say the distance to the first one, to the second, to the third, to the fourth. So this would be R4, to the m power. M is the dimension, the true dimension of my data, the true complexity. So this is something I measure. This is something that we will see how we deal in a second. This is something I know, there are closed formulas in the books. So from this, I'm going to show you in a second that we can estimate this. Okay? Think about this formula. It's very intuitive. If I have I need like four hands to do this. But imagine that you have a ball and there's a line going through. Only a few points will fall inside that ball. Imagine now there is a plane going through. There's going to be more points because I have the whole plane. Imagine now that there is a three-dimensional point cloud. So that ball is full of points. Many more. And that's what this formula is telling me. That depending on how complex your data is, how many points fall inside. Okay? This is a critical formula. Once again, it's not hard to show this relationship. It's just pure geometry. Okay? Now, what can I observe? Given the point cloud, I observe, I draw a sphere center in X and radius R, and I count the number of points inside that sphere. So this is this binomial process. This is identity function. So every time there is a point inside, I count. That's a process I can do. Okay, it's not cheap, but it's not very expensive. And I'm going to make the following two assumptions, which make sense. One is that as n goes to infinity, the number of points does not increase at the same rate as the number of points inside the ball does not increase at the same rate as the total number of points. So k over n goes to zero. So basically, you're not just like overcrowded. Okay, that's normal. And the second is inside that ball, your density is constant. Just inside the ball, not across the point cloud, just locally, is constant. Okay? If you assume these two things, which once again they are normal assumptions, then this is a Poisson process with this constant. The constant of the rate or the constant of the Poisson process is this, and it's only the derivative of the previous function. Once again, just I'm skipping the math in between, just believe me on the formulas. Okay? So the rate of the Poisson process is equal to this density, the volume, mRm minus 1. Okay, R is the radius of the ball that I took. So now, with this formula, I only do a maximal likelihood. So I measure this event. I assume the event comes from a Poisson process. I do maximal likelihood. Okay, I do maximal likelihood. This is the likelihood. I do some derivatives, and I get this closed formula for the complexity at every point. There is also a formula for the log of the density, or for the density, which I will skip in most of my talk, but there is a parallel formula, okay? This formula is very simple. It says if you want to compute the complexity at a point, you just take the complexity, so you take the distance to the first point, the distance to the second point, the distance to the third point, up to the kth point. And that's, again, it's a scale. How far you believe that your estimation of fx constant is true. Okay, depending how local, you compute that, so only distances. You don't have to compute anything else than distances. Some of you might tell me, computing distances in high dimension is not so cheap. I agree with that, but conceptually, just distances. You do this, and you get the local estimation at every point. Yes?
I just want to make sure you're ordering the distance Rj, R1 point as close as R2.
R1 is the distance to the first point, R2 to the second
point.
Not you, the closest to you. The closest, yeah, sorry. The first is the closest. Yeah, okay? So, very simple formula. Very simple computation, relatively fast to do with good techniques to compute nearest neighborhood. That's all what you need to do. This was what Levine and Bickel proposed, and nothing is new in their horizon. If you come from dynamical system, this is a classical estimator in dynamical system, and it was mentioned by Takens in his work many, many years before. So, two issues that I want to address here. The first, there is noise in my system. Life is not easy. And if I only have points on a line embedded in R3, as soon as I add noise, they go out of the line, so this algorithm will believe that they are in R3. It's not a line anymore. So I have to handle that. And I'm going to handle that next. The second is this is good when you only have one dimension, manifolds. And remember, I say I don't believe in manifolds. Okay, I believe that there are mixtures. So we have to extend this Poisson model to be a bit richer, to handle noise and to handle mixtures. Let's handle noise first. So once again, all this was based on counting the number of points inside a ball that goes up to the cave. Okay, so this is your Poisson process, and now I add noise to my Poisson process. But I don't add noise in any way. We are engineers, so we make assumptions. Every point gets noise independently, an assumption that in the same way that I don't believe there exist manifolds, I haven't seen one system that happens in reality where noise is independent, and I haven't seen one paper that doesn't make that assumption, okay? So we have to live with it. It's hard. You don't have to, but the math becomes a bit more complicated. But some of it is studying this book. But we make that assumption. The other assumption is that you add noise, but you never delete points. Okay, so you have your voxels, and you don't remove voxels. Okay, your brain is still your brain. If you make that assumption, it turns out that if this was a Poisson, also the model where you add noise is a Poisson process. Okay? And it's a Poisson process with this constant, the same and bad notation, sorry, F here is the density, not of the point cloud, the density of the noise. Okay? And it will be clear because from now on I call theta the log of F. So theta will be my density of the point cloud. So this is the noise, let's say a Gaussian. It turns out that this is the new constant of the Poisson process. And you can...
I don't see from here. Can you read it?
Yes. Should I tell you the truth? Or so mu, the new density, is the integral over the Gaussian, let's say, multiplied by the old constant. Okay? So it's a simple formula, especially if you know F, if you know the noise. Okay? And all the results are in Snyder and Miller. By the way, if you add insertions of deletions, you can also find this, but it's a bit more complicated formula. Okay? So, I'm almost there with the noise part. Okay? But remember my formula for dimensionality, for complexity. It looks at distances. I'm actually having noise on my data. So how that noise on the data translate to noise of pairwise distances of points? And that's something I have to deal with, because the Poisson model dealt with distances, not with the points. It dealt with actual distances. Okay? So we actually have noise in the distances. And oh, here is the formula again. So this is the constant that I had before, and this is the new constant. Okay? Why do I want this? Because I'm going to do maximal likelihood with this one instead of this in a second. Okay? It turns out, and we do a lot of this analysis in the paper, it turns out that if you add Gaussian noise to your points, the pairwise distances behave very close to Gaussian as well. And the fact that all what I say up to here doesn't matter what F is, but just if I assume Gaussian, I will be able to do a few more formulas. Okay? So if I add Gaussian noise to my data, this actually what happens is a bit more complicated to the distances, but you turn out that you can estimate your distribution of the pairwise distances, Gaussian and convolution with some other functions, and here is actually the estimate, and we have bounds for that estimator. So we have now a Poisson process, lambda, which is the pairwise distances, and we add Gaussian noise to it. We get a new Poisson process, according to this theorem I say, and I'm going to do maximal likelihood on this one. But note that the noise is in the model. So it's not, oh, first the noise and then compute. The noise is part of the model. The model understands that there is noise, and that's going to be clear in the examples. We do maximal likelihood, and we get this monster here. Here is my Gauss density. This is true for all everything, not just for Gaussian. So you get F here. It's a monster. But the main problem is that M, which is the complexity I'm trying to find out, is here and also here. So it's hard. Now I don't have a closed formula anymore. Okay? And this comes because of this. Okay? So we have to numerically solve this. Okay? And people at UCLA, we say, no problem. We are numerical people. We say we are not numerical people, at least at this stage we didn't want to be. So what we did was we do a Taylor expansion of this term. And that's actually smart because I'm in small balls, so I can approximate. And if you do a Taylor expansion, you get this closed formula. So this formula tells you what's the complexity at every point includes the noise model. So if I add noise to my line, it will give me a line. And I will show you that in a second. It won't say 3, it will say it's 1. Because it's inside the model. Okay? So this is an approximation to this. Once again, in the paper, we have the exact bounds for the Gaussian case. Okay? The bounds are only done for that. But more interesting, if there is no noise, then this comes to the Levine-Abickel. So even my approximation converges exactly to the model-free noise. So it looks like it's a good approximation. So I'm on the first step. I solved the noise problem. The noise now is part of the model. And this is something that is very much missing in many engineering applications. We always take noise as a problem. It is a problem. And then we denoise before we segment. Okay? Or we denoise before... I do that all the time. We denoise before we do what we wanted to do. This is saying, no, put the noise in the model. Your estimate has to understand there is noise. Okay? And this, I remember 15 years ago, Astrid Rosenfeld, the father of image processing, said, the big problem of image processing is people believe it's signal plus noise. And that's false. Noise and signal are together. And they should be dealt together. And I don't do that all the time, but in this case I do it, so I can paraphrase Astrid Rosenfeld for that. Not every time it's easy to put your noise in the model. But this time it wasn't easy, but it was doable. Now the next step. So I have this translated, but now I want to mix. I want to mix a line with a plane with a point cloud. So I want to mix, my brain is more complex than just one flat dimension. So we are going to have actually several dimensionalities or complexities, several different densities, and we are going to have a mixture. So pi is the mixture. So basically my model now is this model. My probability function is, I think this is like tied to the floor, so I don't think I can move it. But it's a linear combination of Poisson processes. Okay? So it's pi, and these are the Poisson processes. So it's classical, those of you that are familiar with mixture of Gaussians, this is a mixture of translated Poisson process. Translated because I'm going to include the noise, and mixture because I have more than one. So now from your data set, I'm going to have to estimate pi, theta j, mj. I'm going to have many more things to estimate. I think it's coming again, the equation, in a second, a bit higher. Okay? So once again, my observations are as before. For every point, I put a ball and I observe. But I'm not going to have one maximal likelihood. If you do log, you get the other part. So zeta is actually the jth mixture. So it's the hidden variable that says that this particular observation T, just at one point, comes from the mixture J. So it's a hidden variable that I need to find out. And the way we find out, and I'm going to show formulas in a second, is classical expectation maximization. Okay? So first you say, okay, I'm going to assume the membership function. So I'm going to say this point belongs to class 1, this point belongs to class 2. Think about k-means. It's the simplest example of kind of an EM algorithm. With that, I estimate the parameters. With those estimates, I go back here and I go back and forth, back and forth. Before I show you the equations, let me just give you an interpretation. Basically, what I'm doing a maximum likelihood estimator, but of all the points at the same time, of the all the classes at the same time. So given the data, once again, the data is how many points fall in every ball, I need to estimate the parameters, which is m and theta, so the complexity and the density for every class, so this is a vector, and the membership functions. And by the way, these are probabilistic. So every point will say, oh, I'm 70% of probability of being in this class and 30 in this class. This is not going to be a binary segmentation. Okay? If the probability is high, you can threshold after that. Okay? But this is more powerful in that sense. So we're trying to do a maximum likelihood. This is the expectation of the log, and this is the entropy of the membership. That's what the likelihood is doing. It's basically trying to optimize for this. Okay, so that's the likelihood. And once again, there is math to get to the formulas, but I'm going to show you in a second. And this is what the E step is going to do. It's going to first maximize trying to find the best probabilities of belonging to every class, and then fix that and maximize psi. Of course, with the constraint that the membership has to add to 1. So a point can be 0.7 in one, 0.3 in the other, but not then 0.1 in another one. So it's classical.
Would the noise be here?
I'm gonna every one of these P is a translated Poisson.
So
you missed that because it was down here. Every P here is a translated Poisson process.
So the noise
there should be a sigma here, which I didn't put. But
so the additive noise, the translation noise is now back into the model.
Yeah, it should be here.
No,
sorry.
I'm not doing the approximation.
No. There should be a sigma here, which is the noise. Yeah. Sorry about that. It will come in a second back in the formulas and in the experiments, but it should be a sigma here. But for all the experiments I'm going to show you, that sigma is not learned as part, okay, for the experiments I'm going to show you. So there's no maximum likelihood on the noise variance for the experiments I'm going to show you. Not there, but that means if you just do likelihood, it's one more parameter. It's mathematically easy. It might complicate my life. The good part of the likelihood, and before I show you the formulas, is we can add regularization terms. Okay? We can actually say, before we were trying to optimize for the likelihood, now we can add a regularization term. Let me just give you one example here. We can say, you should belong more or less to the same class as your neighbors, for example. More or less. So we add a term, this is my regularization, that penalizes where your membership function is very different than your neighbor's. And that's part of the same optimization. You do a maximum likelihood. We want to estimate the memberships, that means the mixture. We want to estimate the dimensionality of every one and the theta of every one. And we do classical EM, but I'm going to show you the formulas because they look fun. So this is how you update the membership function. This term only appears if you add regularization. It appears naturally here. This is how you update the membership. Then you fix the membership, and you update the parameters of every mixture. These are the formulas to update. So at the end, it's just formulas, very simple formulas, that all what they have is pairwise distances, nothing like that. So all these complicated formulas are just pairwise, based on pairwise distances, nothing else than that. And if you are interested, it's interesting to see that the updates are actually weighted harmonic means. They just come out from the EM algorithm. It's not that we force them. They just came out to be weighted harmonic means. And it makes sense because you're trying to optimize for entropy. So it makes sense, kind of. And some of you might make sense more than it makes sense for me. But there is a question. Oh, I didn't see a hand. Sorry. Sorry, I couldn't.
But the regularization, you find neighbors in 105 dimensions.
In finite dimensions?
105.
Oh, yeah, I say, conceptual is very easy. Conceptual is very simple. All this algorithm is based on finding nearest neighborhoods. By the way, every manifold learning algorithm today in the literature is based on that at some point or another. Yes, we find nearest neighbors in 100 dimensions, and there are tricks to do that, but yes, unfortunately, we have to do that.
We do all the tricks
in the book using, you can either do directly if you have enough computational time, or you can just do like random projections following index work, for example. Yeah, we do some of that, yeah, thank you. Yeah, I briefly mentioned that conceptually it's easy, but it's expensive to find your closest point in 100 dimensions. It's not very cheap, but it's doable. But sometimes we use the Indic random projection type of approach. Yeah. So these are the formulas. And once again, caveat what Professor Remuri said, that it's not cheap, but it's only based on pairwise distances, which you can compute only once, by the way. Okay, so you get your data set and you do that once. You don't have to repeat this. That means you only use them again, but you compute them only once in your data set. And we did some asymptotic studies. This is for the original model. This is our model. So you actually get the true estimation, and this is the bias that depends on the number of points and things like that, and this is the variance. So there is a formal study in this. I should make give credit to Gloria. I mean, she did a lot of beautiful mathematical work on all these formulas that I get. There is a lot of steps to get to them, and some of this is here. By the way, this variance is based on H being binary.
Here, most, since you're really solving the likelihood problem, so this is at the convergence point, of course, your bias.
Yeah.
What's causing the bias? What in the model, what in the estimation, you know, if you're really solving, you're looking at there's no approximation to the solution, right? You're really solving the nearest point, new algorithm, you solve the likelihood.
It comes from the nearest neighborhood problem. I'm not going to dwell into this, but you see this remark that the formulas of the maximum likelihood say you should divide by k minus 1, the formula I show. Actually, even in Levina's paper, they show that if you divide by k minus 2, you get better bias, which I mean shorter, and that's because of local nearest neighborhood. And there is actually most of dimensionality estimation problems have a bias because of nearest neighborhood in high dimensions are biased.
So you want that regularization to relax, sort of like a sieve. As sample size goes to infinity, you would.
Yeah.
You know, and then you would.
But, oh, sorry. This was without the regularization, this analysis. This is without. The regularization might get me better variance, but we didn't manage yet to do the analysis with the regularization. The K is a scale.
It's
not a regularization in the sense it's not forcing this to be penalized for getting into a different class than the next one. It will, because they will probably be in the same ball up to a few boundary points. So they tend to be, but I can enforce it even more. Okay? So it's true that two balls that are close will more or less include the same points, but not exactly the same points. So that's why maybe the regularization helps, and I will show in a second depending on your data set. Okay?
I'm surprised that you don't get k. I mean, you don't need k going to infinity for the variance between zero. You have it?
No.
You're the statistician, maybe.
Well, not enough. Or, okay. Closer than your nearest neighborhood to statistics is closer than mine. But so let me just give you some examples, artificial first, just to give you an idea, and then on brain imaging. Remember, we have noise or not noise, and regularization or not. So I'm going to be talking about Poisson mixture model, translated Poisson mixture model, regularized or non-regularized. And I'm going to explain that in a second. So this is the case of a kind of a spiral and a plane. And I'm going to give you numbers in a second. Forget about the comparisons. These are just so when you write a paper, you have to compare to the literature. But this is our result. So it's regularized and translated. Everything has noise. Okay? Let me just give you the tables. So these are basically a one-dimensional kind of curve with noise. Oops, went too fast. One-dimensional with noise and a two-dimensional plane with noise. Okay? So if you don't basically do the translation, you are overestimating much more than we are overestimating if we do the translated Poisson. Okay? And this actually is very little noise, but in the paper we have actually, we did examples with the classical digits database, and your complexity estimate goes from 12 to 2 because you add the noise. So you're basically back into the right manifold. Okay, so the estimates, these estimates are actually very accurate when you compare to the literature. Before I show you the other things, this is actually the same example, but now the line has two different densities. And here are our estimates. It says that, by the way, we don't tell how many classes there are in the algorithm. Okay, that's learned as part of the process. So the algorithm learns three classes, one with complexity 2, basically meaning that two parameters can represent that, and density, this is the log of the density, 0.49, so this is this guy. One with complexity 1, and this density, this is this guy. And one with complexity 1, and different density, this is this guy. Okay? So we learn basically, that there were different sampling rules. Okay? And as I say, if you look at these papers, we have a lot of imaging and video examples, so where you can actually classify video activities and stuff like that. But let me just say, I can show them in a second if you want. So let me just give you two slides. Maybe I'm going to start with this slide, and then I'm going to go to this slide.
Just have a question.
Yes.
How do you learn alpha? Is it something else that you didn't talk about?
It's a parameter. We don't learn. We do multi-scale now. We actually graph it and we estimate it. We don't learn.
The alpha was the number of classes.
No, no. Oh, no. The number of classes. How many? Oh, yeah, no, no. Alpha is the regularization.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't learn the regularization.
No, how do you learn the number of classes?
Okay.
In the
half brute force, in the following sense, that if I overestimate, my classes will be empty. My overestimated classes. So let's say in this case where I had 3, I put 5, it will happen one or two things. Either there will be, remember I have my age, so it will give to every point a 0 probability of being into these extra classes, or it will end up having one class split in 2 with the same dimensionality, the same complexity, the same everything. So you say, oh, that's one class according to complexity and density. I'm going to talk about more in my last slide about that in a second. Yeah. So, as I say, Christoph will talk about much more about the data. I think his talk is on Wednesday. But let me just give you two experiments of diffusion imaging. So this is an experiment that we did. The data comes from Paul. This is FA. And we were going to ask the following question. What type of representation from diffusion imaging do I need to understand the complexity of brain connectivity? And people do a lot of things. So, for example, here is just the raw Hardy data. This is 30 directions, if I'm correct, Paul. 30. It wasn't the 105. It's 30. No, this is the 105 came after this. This is color code according to complexity. And you can look at the complexity that we found here, but it will be clear in the next slide. This is fourth order spherical harmonics So we fit, thanks to the INRIA team, we fix fourth order spherical harmonics, sixth order spherical harmonics, and then we treat each of them as a high dimensional vector. We do the fourth order with sharpening, the sixth order with sharpening. All things that people have done in the literature, but then we ask very simple questions. Which one of these is actually the right one? If I'm only trying to answer a very simple question, some people say FA, we say complexity. I just want to see which one gives me the right measurement. And we have full analysis on this. And Christoph, we look at the stability. Is fourth order enough? Does it give me the same result as sixth order? Or I'm underestimating the complexity of my problem? So these are basic questions that I always get surprised that people, before using certain technology, don't ask these very basic questions about, is your representation sufficient to infer the information that you want to infer? This is one of the questions that Kelvin Lim asked me all the time. He said, nobody has shown to me from the information theory point of view that what I'm doing is enough information to answer the question that I'm doing. Very seldom that's done. So we tried to do a very modest experiment on that. And then we did another experiment where we actually go into the forceps minor here and we get out of it. We're going out of it, and this is dimensionality and complexity. So let me just tell you what you expect. Places where you have a lot of anisotropy, very clear anisotropy, that's a very simple local manifold, just one direction, okay? Maybe a bit more of that. Two and a half parameters are enough to go into that. When you start moving away, so for example, if I'm in the fluids region, the complexity goes really up. There is no clear directionality. So when you start getting away, then your complexity starts increasing. When you start having crossings, then two parameters are not enough. Okay? And this is what this is telling us. We were blind to the anatomy. Maybe we shouldn't have been. But in this case, we run the algorithm. This is just point clouds of boxes. Okay? Mix. No spatial relationship. Just they were put in the algorithm. And the algorithm automatically detects that there is a region here with this complexity, another region here with this complexity, another region here with this complexity, another region here with this complexity. It just labeled the boxes according to that changing complexity that we know actually exists. This is a kind of a validation. We know it exists in the brain. So there is no manifold in diffusion imaging. Just if nothing else you get from this lecture, there is no manifold there, okay? Because things that go in one direction cannot be in the same manifold as things that cross, okay? They cannot be, okay? So just to conclude, and look, I made it even on time. We estimate the different dimensions and densities. We include the noise in the model. We show how to include the regularization in the part of the framework, and I show experiments on synthetic. The ones on real data are these brain imaging experiments plus the ones that you're going to get in a couple of days. One of the things that we don't do is what happens if you have two regions of the brain that have the same complexity but have another feature that actually makes them different. Not complexity, not density. Then you have to go and try to include it here, because here is only based on complexity and density. So that's one thing. The other thing is now we're doing more population studies, and I just kind of hint, for example, one question we ask is, do we need 105 directions? And the preliminary experiment showed that the 30 and the 105 are giving us more or less the same complexity maps. I'm not saying you don't need 105. So first of all, these are preliminary. So next year or in 2 years, when we do the full population, maybe this will not be valid anymore. But if this stands, it says that just for complexity, it looks like 105, it might be too much. Maybe it's good for other things, but if you just want to understand how complex the brain is, the brain connectivity, maybe you don't need it. But once again, I think we run like one or two, or I don't remember exactly how many. So when we run the whole population analysis and things like that, we will get a better answer. But that's where we are going, to just doing massive analysis of data. Just a question of complexity. nothing else than just a question of local complexity. Okay? Thank you very much.
Well, thanks, Guillermo, for a really thought-provoking talk. And I think my IQ has been raised by quite a bit, but we'll go down later. If there are any brief questions for Guillermo, yeah, Baba.
Very nice talk.
Thank you.
So the point cloud idea of representing diffusion MRI data set as a point cloud. I'm not sure I understand that fully. Because the way I'm seeing the diffusion data is it's basically trying to get scalar values over a sphere of directions at each image lattice point. Okay? In which case, you basically have a bunch of scalar values in different directions, but you want the regularization across the image lattice, right? What was the regularization being imposed on?
Neighbors is the one that I show. Neighbors should be penalized for not having similar age.
So the
neighbors can be two things. In this case, can be lattice neighbors, or can be neighbors in high dimension. As well, in this case, it's lattice neighbors. So that's where the spatial relationship enters into account here.
That is pretty much standard lattice-based regularization that you use, right? So why do you need the regularization in whatever, n 105 dimension or whatever it is?
I'm not sure I understand your question, but let me see if I understand it.
I mean, is that regularization?
This is standard. This, which was the core of my talk, is not. So this is the estimation of the complexity. This is regular Markov random field, this is actually a POTS sampling regularization that just says neighbors should have. So this, and I say that, this is just classical. The non-classical is this, considering that your data does not belong to a manifold. So all these papers on using Laplace and Agrimaps or using ISOMAP just don't make any sense for this data. They make sense only locally. They don't make any sense to a global analysis where you have change of complexity because there is an underlying assumption of manifold. Besides the work on diffusion distances that the people at IMRIA have done because there is no assumption of manifold there. There's no explicit exploitation and computation, but there's no intrinsic analysis. So this, the fact that you say your data lives in the mixture of manifolds, I think is new. I haven't seen it before. Maybe you have, but I haven't seen it before. And then this regularization, and also the fact that we include the noise in the model, something that no manifold learning has been done. That means manifold learning has been based on denoising, then do the analysis. Here is explicit in the model.
Yeah,
but this is the new, not this.
Yeah. I think I misunderstood that you were putting SH only on the image lattice. I thought that you were putting it very high dimensional space.
No, unless you believe that in that space there should also be a regularization, but I don't know there has to be like a prior that says, for example, images. That means points in 30 dimensions that are close should have the same complexity. I don't think that assumption is correct, so we have it. That's why this model in this case is just lattice. That means your point and your neighbor. By the way, this, for example, in the video is your point and the next frame. But this is where the art of the biology should come in. What should be my regularization prior? Yeah. But sorry if I missed that part. Because as you say, it's more classical, I move fast on that. Yeah, sorry about that, and I'm glad for the clarification.
This question over here.
Yeah, I mean, this might be a very naive question. Regarding the complexity, right? If you take your DTI, the data that you get from your DTI experiment, and then do something extremely simple, something like what we do to measure image entropy. And you divide a sphere into different bins and then assign your probability of actually the diffusion happening in the direction and create, you know, some of the logs of that, you know, just like Shannon entropy. And actually see, I mean, for example, if you see that it's going in all directions, exactly. So if you just do directly, apart from all the formulas, have you tried to see if that figure that you showed at the end of the diffusion tensor measuring where you showed the complexity sort of going up, and if I'm not really interested in the dimensionality but only the complexity, a very simple approach like just calculating that would actually give me the same result.
Okay.
Not? I think, I don't know.
So, my information theory colleagues will be upset with your question because you mentioned entropy. The moment you ask me a question about the entropy, you have to tell me what's your model. Or your question cannot be answered because entropy is P log P. So I have to understand the model to be able to compute entropy. Okay? If you don't give me a model, the question, first of all, you have to give me the order of entropy. But most importantly, you have to give me the model. So you don't have to estimate the model. Here it is. I'm telling you, if you now want to use my translated Poisson model to compute entropy, that's fine. That's fine, but you have to ask, what's the model that you're going to use for every pixel? What's the model? What's your probability density function to be able to compute P log P?
My case is very simple. Just that, you know, you bin the sphere into regular solid angles and measure where's the probability of diffusion in that solid angle. It's an ad hoc.
So you're using empirical entropy, you're just measuring.
Absolutely.
So I'm using a model that actually has mathematical foundations because a Poisson model is what you actually get here. It's not that we shuffle the Poisson model. So what I'm saying is your model should be a Poisson model, a mixture of Poisson translated models instead of the empirical entropy. And now, and that's a very good question, I don't think we have taken this mixture of Poisson and now compute local entropy using it. For example, that would be a nice step. We just stuck with what the Poisson gave me with the M, but maybe I should also use this Poisson model to compute local entropy. But I need to estimate the model to be able to estimate my entropy. And it probably because the Poisson model M is kind of a complexity, as I say. It's just the complexity indirectly is in here. There is an entropy here. Of membership. Oh boy. Where was I? So we are optimizing for it with the Poisson mixture. Yeah, but the key point is to estimate the model here. And again, I want to repeat maybe the key point of everything is to move beyond from assuming that data comes on a manifold. So there are. I'm going to give my talk in multi-scale, and that should be the first scale of the result. And if you say, but I don't believe anything else you say to me after that, I'm fine with that. We follow this path, but just try to accept the model that most interesting data does not, unfortunately, live on a simple manifold. Locally, it's on a manifold, but you have to consider a bit beyond that.
But
so
if I fractal,
what?
You find non-integral dimension.
That's important. Yeah, that's an important question. What 2.7 means, and why don't I get 3? Okay. Yeah, and that's because I'm kind of living in a continuous domain. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, is it a part? I mean, does your theory rely on integer dimension?
No, I don't rely. That's why I get that. By the way, this is a discussion that we are always having with Paul and with Christoph. And let me just show you this table, maybe just to try to answer. There are two concepts here. One is the clustering. By the way, these are confusion matrices. So the clustering is, so you can believe if you want the clustering and say these are just clustered by different complexities. Then you can go into every cluster and do your own estimation of dimensionality by any of the methods. So we give by free the dimensionality that is estimated by assume a mixture of translated Poisson, by not assuming, by modeling this as a mixture of translated Poisson. You can actually say, now I'm going to forget this number, just give me the cluster and I'm going to do my isomat, for example, on that or something like that. And we actually can show, and we show in the paper that there is a high correlation, but once you have clustered that. So you can say, I want to have a different measure of complexity or dimension just once you cluster. So there's both the qualitative and the quantitative. Let's say just cluster and then do it, or the other way around. Yeah, but there are many questions. Okay, we should stop there. He says great. I think we should end the talk now.
Are there any less difficult questions? Okay, if not, well, thank you.
Thank you.